Money FM 89.3, best of your money. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Well, investors in Japan appear to be cheering the successful start of the Summer Olympics. That plus a record-setting session on Wall Street this past Friday. The Nikkei is currently trading up about 1.7%. Stocks elsewhere are mixed. Sydney is up, but Seoul is in the red. Joining me now to break down all the market action, he's Abhilash Narayan, Senior Investment Strategist at Standard Chartered Private Bank. Good morning. How are you, Abhilash?
Good morning, Michelle.
Wall Street finished at record highs on Friday, with the Dow closing at about 35,000. Now, if you had asked investors about the likelihood of a record finish just a couple of days earlier, I'm not sure you would have found many enthusiasts. Last Monday, markets started off with a 2% slide amid worries about the COVID-19 Delta variant, not to mention concerns about inflation and economic recovery. So what do you think, Abhilash? Are investors really ready to put these concerns in the rearview mirror? And do you see much upside for stocks from here?
Thanks, Michelle. And you're absolutely right. It has been a roller coaster week with the drop we saw last Monday. And the reasons you highlighted were COVID and inflation. Mm-hmm. Now, if you look at the technicals, right, so from a downside perspective, we see a strong support at 4238, mm-hmm. So which is, you know, a little way off from the current level of 4411. So we think from a technical perspective, the uptrend in U.S. stock markets, especially for S&P, is still intact. And one of the big reasons for that is obviously earnings. So we have the Q2 earnings season ongoing, and it has got off to a very, very good start. So about one-fourth of the companies have reported till now. And out of those, 87% have beaten earnings expectations. Now, that is saying something when you consider the fact that, you know, heading into this earnings season, markets were expecting about 65% earnings growth. Now, obviously, some part of that was due to base effects, but it's still difficult to downplay the fact that, you know, the earnings we've seen till now have beaten those elevated expectations by about 19.5%. So strong earnings are what's powering through U.S. markets right now.
Yeah, let's take a closer look at that. In the coming week, 165 constituents of the S&P 500 are set to release earnings. And among the big names opening their books are Apple, Alphabet, Microsoft, and Tesla. Abhilash, what are you going to be on the lookout for on the earnings front in the week ahead?
Well, absolutely. It is a very, very crucial week for U.S. earnings, one of the most blockbuster weeks most companies reporting. Now, I think to state the obvious, one of the things people are looking out for is whether the strong economic momentum that we have seen in the past 2 weeks, whether that continues. Mm. Apart from that, I think from the management commentary side, we are focusing on whether, you know, companies are indicating, you know, whether cost pressures are starting to filter through and whether they could impact margins. We've obviously seen inflation in U.S. being quite elevated. And, you know, that could obviously hurt companies' margins. So that's what we are looking through. But, you know, if you look at the broader picture, we think that, you know, U.S. equity earnings will increase by or grow by about 40% compared to 2020. So we think that strong earnings and the fact that U.S. is one of the leaders in vaccination mean that U.S. equities are likely to continue outperforming global equities for the next 6 to 12 months.
All right. Tech stocks have been outperforming. The Nasdaq rose nearly 3% last week, and the index is closing in on the 15,000 mark. In case you're wondering which tech stocks have been leading the way, the best performers so far this year include Moderna, Applied Material, and Google parent company Alphabet. All have gains of more than 50%. Moderna shares are actually up more than 200%. Abhilash, as part of your job, you keep an eye on bond markets and yields. And I saw that you published an article earlier this month posing the question as to whether declining bond yields represent an opportunity or a warning. Another headline along the same lines caught my eye this weekend, the New York Times deal book writing that, quote, no one believes the bond markets. The yield on the 10-year U.S. Treasury note is trading below 1.3%. Falling yields often signal low growth ahead, but that interpretation seems to be at odds right now with the current stock market euphoria. So what do you make of this, Abhilash?
Thanks, Michelle. And that's the big debate in the bond market circles, and with stock markets and bond markets giving contrasting signals. But we think that, you know, if you want to reconcile, it's a matter of time frame. So stock market specifically are focusing on the strong economic rebound that we are likely to see over the next 12 to 18 months. So obviously this year, growth expectations in US are, you know, around 6.5 to 7%. And next year as well, growth should be quite strong given the fiscal stimulus that is on the way. But if we look farther out, right, we think that the underlying economic fundamentals have not necessarily changed. So pre-COVID, obviously, most of the global or developed market economies were struggling to grow above 2-2.5% on a sustainable basis. And when we think about it, what has changed to cause a shift in those you know, economic trends? And it's difficult to find very, very solid reasons. So we think that the bond markets, especially 10 and 30 year bond market investors, are focusing on the fact that, you know, yes, we have seen a temporary boost in inflation. Mm-hmm. We have seen a temporary boost in growth. Mm-hmm. But 2-3 years out, we are probably likely to, resume to those long-term trends that the markets had been experiencing pre-COVID. And if you look at inflation as well, inflation expectations have come down quite sharply since March. And that's, again, a signal that bond markets are looking through this transitory inflation that we are seeing right now and think that on, over a longer term, it's difficult for U.S. inflation, let's say, to beat the 2% benchmark that the Fed has set. So it's a question of timing of economic horizons that stock markets and bond markets are looking at. But yeah, we think that, you know, at current levels, at 1.3%, bond markets may be a bit expensive. So we expect 10-year treasury yields to go to 1.75%. Mm. And what that means is that, you know, from stocks perspective, we think value sectors should outperform tech over the next 6 months or so. Mm-hmm. And again, in bond space, we think that high yield bonds would be the beneficiaries of this.
Just to underscore the position on time frames and, you know, transitory, the key word that seems to apply to bond markets as well. Some leading stock market analysts, including at Goldman Sachs, disagree. They say the bond market is broken. What do you think?
Well, it's fair to say that the bond market is distorted, right? So if you look at the fact that the Fed is buying $1 trillion worth of treasuries right now, obviously puts a downward pressure on yield. And apart from that, if you look at the total market holdings, Fed holds, you know, around a quarter of the treasury markets out there. So again, that does hurt the liquidity. But we think it's not just a one-way street. If you're looking at the aggregate supply of bonds, sticking with U.S., that is, you know, around 50 to 60% higher that we saw in pre-COVID years, and that is net of Fed buying. So there are private market buyers who are stepping in to support the extra or additional supply of bonds that is coming through. So yes, I mean, like I mentioned earlier, the current yields look a bit stretched, and there are obviously, you know, factors that Fed purchases do distort the market to a bit, but, you know, I wouldn't go as far as to say that bond markets are completely broken.
He's Abhilash Narayan, Senior Investment Strategist from Standard Chartered Private Bank. I'm Michelle Martin, and you're on Market View. Now, in addition to earnings and the bond markets, Abhilash, investors are likely to have their eyes on at least two other factors this week, the Fed and China's economy. So let's start with the Fed. The U.S. Federal Reserve meets on Tuesday and Wednesday. Is this finally the month when markets will get some concrete guidance about how or when the Fed plans to pull back on its easy credit policy, Abhilash?
I wish, but I don't think we'll get any concrete guidance. Because if you look at the Fed, right, since the June meeting, the previous meeting, we have seen a big shift, if not a U-turn, in the Fed guidance or the tone of Fed guidance. Because just last week, Fed Chair Powell pushed back the notions that Fed was starting to unwind accommodative policies. And the fact that he mentioned this in front of the Congress does raise the bar for Fed to announce any tapering of bond purchases in the upcoming policy meeting. And additionally, I mean, if you look at U.S. economic data, yes, it is quite strong at an absolute level. But if you're looking at the trajectory, economic data seems to be normalizing. If you look at Citibank U.S. Economic Surprises Index, that has moved from fairly positive territory earlier in the year, close to, you know, neutral or slightly negative territory. So economic data is slowing down. So, given the market reaction that we have seen, what the bond markets are telling us, we think that it's unlikely that the Fed would announce, tapering or give concrete guidance about tapering just as yet. But I think there are other things that investors are watching out for. So for us, we are watching the Jackson Hole Summit in August, which traditionally has been, one of the forums where Fed has made big announcements. So that could be the next thing to watch out for.
All right. Asian investors, meanwhile, may take a pause to consider the pace of China's economy. China's recovery is beginning to show some signs of weakness. Property sales are slumping. Confidence among small businesses is slipping. And Chinese stocks are down as well. Abhilash, to what extent do you expect this relative slowdown to weigh on Asian markets?
At a headline level, we think that, yes, in the near term, Chinese stock markets could face a bit of volatility. But on a 12-month horizon, we think that the Chinese stock markets are likely to perform in line with the broader Asia-Japan markets. Now, if you talk about Chinese economic growth, obviously we've seen the slowdown, as you mentioned, and we've seen the authorities' response. So, just the weekend before this one, China's central bank did cut the RRR rate. So that is being viewed as a step in the direction of relaxing policy to stabilize growth. And what's important to remember is the fact that, up till now, PBOC has never stopped at just one RRR rate cut. So if history is any guide, over the next few months, we could see a few more RRR cuts coming through. I mean, if you look at the commentary that's coming through, it seems to us that the authorities are highlighting that, the focus is shifting from, just curbing excessive credit towards, stabilizing the growth. If you look at previous RRR cuts, they don't necessarily signal an imminent rise in equity markets, Chinese equity markets. So we think that at this point of time, if investors want to play the positive impact in RRR cuts, then Asian US dollar denominated bonds, are an attractive route to gain exposure to China, given the fact that valuations in this asset class have, cheapened quite significantly.
Well, on the topic of exposure to China, China imposed the harshest curbs yet on its $100 billion private tutoring and online education sector. On Saturday, it ordered companies that offer tutoring on the school curriculum to essentially go non-profit. And that potentially wipes out quite a big chunk of private equity and venture capital billions that have been staked on this sector. So how do you think China's crackdown on the edtech sector, how do you think this is going to impact companies, Chinese firms seeking to IPO, or global investors?
Yes, I think that's been the biggest announcement over the week. And if you look at the reaction of some of the major stocks, listed in US from China edtech sector, they appear to have fallen by about 50 to 70% overnight. So I think it's safe to say that the announcement that came over the weekend was a big surprise for the markets. And, while people were anticipating some tightening of regulatory measures over the sector, what we've witnessed is a lot more stringent than what people were expecting. But I think if you take a step back, this is not an isolated incident. Chinese regulators and authorities have been stepping up their scrutiny of the tech sector for a few months. And right now, obviously, the thought of buying China tech sector feels like catching a falling knife. Pardon me. So what we did was we looked at, two potential guiding scenarios. One was the anti-corruption campaign that we saw in China between 2014 and 16. And there, Macau gaming stocks underperformed Hang Seng Index by more than 50%. So that's one thing that we looked at. Mm-hmm. Secondly, we looked at the FANG stocks in U.S. because, U.S. tech sector has faced its own fair share of, concerns around regulatory scrutiny, though, not as severe as what we're seeing in China. And in FANG stocks, we saw that, the average drawdown was around 20% mm-hmm. with a max drawdown of around 35%. So, given the fact that Hang Seng China Tech Index has fallen around 25% this year, it is possible that there is a bit more distance before we, hit the bottom. But we think that, the tech sector is strategically important for China, mm-hmm. given the ongoing rivalry that they have with U.S. in the tech space. So, on a 12-month horizon, we still have a neutral view on China tech, though we acknowledge that in the near term, there could be heightened volatility.
On the bigger picture, on the topic of Southeast Asian markets, now the first half of the year has been an active one for IPOs. There were more than 50 new listings in the first half of the year, and they raised nearly $5 billion. That is some 50% more than a year earlier. A couple of questions here. First, why do you think the market for Southeast Asian IPOs is so strong?
Thanks. I think, if you look at the economic backdrop of Southeast Asia, you look at the demographics, this is an area which has has a region which has a fairly large population to tap on, and you know, the tech companies that have been coming up in Southeast Asia region have been quick to capitalize on the opportunity to serve the masses. So I think from a economic perspective, there is a fairly big opportunity set out there for some of the Southeast Asia tech based companies. Mm-hmm. And since the market has been maturing for the last few years, given the favorable conditions this year, obviously we've seen a pickup in IPO activity. Now, obviously, with the possibility of tapering happening and the volatility that we've seen, obviously the big question is whether we continue to see the same pace of IPOs or, does the market slow down a bit?
Now, while the region is doing well, Singapore is actually lagging on this front. There were only 3 new listings here during the first half of the year. Why do you think that is?
Well, if you take a step back, there are potentially 3 reasons which explain this.
Mm.
Firstly, if you look at the composition of the Straits Times Index, it is quite value-oriented, right? So you've got banks, which are a big part of the index. Then you've got real estate sector, both developers and REITs, which are again a part of the index. So there is a value tilt towards Singapore stock markets. And if you look at the new IPOs which are coming through, new listings that are coming through, most of them are in the tech sector. So I think one reason is sector tilt. The second, obviously, is the fact that, while Singapore is a regional economic hub, the other Southeast Asian countries do have a much larger population. There are a lot more companies out there, and they have a bigger catchment market. So I think the fact that Singapore itself is a market which is relatively small compared to, let's say, Indonesian markets or others, does also impact the fact that how many companies list here. So I think it's partly structural, mm-hmm. but obviously there is always hope ahead.
All right. And speaking of the Singapore market, the Straits Times Index finished marginally higher last week at 3157. The STI made some good gains during the first part of the year, but has pretty much traded sideways since then. What is your take on Singapore stocks now, Abhilash?
I think the fact that the stocks have traded sideways is partly explained by the global value versus growth sort of debate that has been going on.
Mm.
So like you mentioned, we did hit a 2021 high earlier in the year, but since then the markets have been trading a bit sideways. And if you look at it, the fact that bond yields have fallen from 1.77% in US from early March to 1.3% right now has led to an underperformance of value style stocks globally, not just in US or Singapore.
Mm-hmm.
And as I mentioned earlier, there is a strong value tilt in Singapore markets right now. So obviously, the decline in yields has hurt the market performance. But we think that 10-year treasury yields should rise to 1.75% in the next 6 to 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something which we think is a favorable factor for value stocks. So given the heavy weightage to banking sector, we think that financials are one sector which really benefit from rising yields. So you could say that things do look positive for Singapore stock market, though it's difficult to say whether it will outperform the broader Asia and Japan market just as yet.
All right, let's check in on the local market now. We are 24 minutes into the local trading day, and the Straits Times Index is currently trading at 3149. That is down 0.24%. This has been Market View. He's been Abhilash Narayan, my guest this morning, Senior Investment Strategist at Standard Chartered Private Bank. I'm Michelle Martin.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance.